Local Talk Wednesday on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in our seven-county listening area in central Iowa. Thank you for listening in. I am your host for today, Susan Franzen. Our lead story today was inspired by the water quality bill passed by the Senate last week. As our listeners know, water quality has been a focus on a lot of Local Talk programs. As it turns out, this bill, S-512, which is touted as a great victory for Governor Kim Reynolds, is very controversial. In fact, even the governor admitted, quote, passing this long-awaited legislation does not mean the water quality discussion is over, end quote. But at least everyone interested should know it will be going on for the next few months. Representative Chip Baltimore, Republican from District 37 in Boone, was so angry about the content of S-512 that he gave a six-minute speech denouncing it on the floor of the House the day before the Senate approved it. I spoke with him yesterday about why he opposed it. He explained that the water quality bill approved by the Iowa House last year, House File 612, which he had sponsored and guided, had gained bipartisan support by addressing concerns of a wide variety of farming and environmental groups. It had passed with a huge majority in the House, but it didn't come up for a vote in the Senate. This year's Senate bill is much narrower, primarily addressing concerns of a very few powerful lobbying groups. The water quality bill was front page news in the Des Moines Register last Sunday. Reporters Bianna Fannin Steele and Donna Eller did a thorough job of consulting with both supporters and critics of the bill. Speaking on behalf of the 65 member organizations that make up the Iowa Environmental Council, Executive Director Jennifer Terry said, quote, "We know what needs to be done. We just need the political will and money to get it done," end quote. Not all of us know what needs to be done, much less how to mobilize the political will to get it done. So we are fortunate to have the Iowa Environmental Council's Manager of Government Affairs, Carrie Johansson, with us today. Hello, Carrie.
Good morning.
Can you give us some ideas about how we can influence that political will, as well as specific things that would make a difference?
Sure. I think having folks involved directly in the process is one of the most powerful things you can have, and I really appreciate you having me on the show this morning to talk about this issue. Iowans really care about water quality. It's been shown again and again that people really have this as a top priority issue. And one of the best ways, the ways that people are going to have really the most impact is with their very own legislator. And so contacting your legislator is actually a very powerful thing to do, and there's sort of a hierarchy of the things that are most impactful when you're doing that. And the first thing that's going to be the most impactful is to actually go down to Des Moines and go and see your legislator in person. That's not always possible for everyone, and so the next most impactful thing is going to be to do a phone call, and then next would be a handwritten letter, and after that would be something like an email or responding to sort of a mass email or something like that would be there then down the list. And so those are some different ways that people can directly get involved in advocating for an issue. I would suggest, you know, if there are groups, the Iowa Environmental Council does have a legislative newsletter that comes out each week, and we have an action alert system you can sign up to so that you can stay on top of what's happening at the Capitol on water quality and other environmental issues that you may care about, and take action at the appropriate time, show up at a time that's going to be most impactful. And so those are a few ways that you can sort of stay on top of the issues and get involved directly with your legislature.
There are several things that were mentioned in the article and that we talked about on the phone. What is the biggest difference between this bill and what needs to be done?
Yeah, sure. So Senate File 512, the thing that's really lacking here is a coordinated, what we call a watershed approach. And water doesn't flow by county boundaries. It doesn't have any kind of political agenda. And so it flows where it's going to flow. And the area it flows over is called a watershed. We all live in a watershed. And so to take an approach where we look at where is the pollution in that watershed coming from, where's the water picking up that pollution as it carries it downstream, what are the hot spots that we need to address, and then working together with urban and rural people to say, okay, where do our investments get the most bang for their buck as we are working on water quality? And so having that coordinated approach is one really important aspect of it that the Senate bill did not contain. The Senate bill continued the status quo, which is an approach of offering cost share to ag producers sort of wherever people are willing and interested to do it. And we know that that's not an approach that works. Without buy-in from local people, without local people getting to come and express their concerns and talk about why it is they care about water quality in the area, what issues they want to address, and then bringing everybody to the table, making a plan, that's the way to really make progress and get things done.
What are the kind of things that local people might be aware of that would be ignored if it just was paying farmers to put in cover crops and so forth?
Great. That's a great question. So one of the things that often gets ignored and has been ignored in this debate, this is really centered around nutrients in the water, which are nitrogen and phosphorus. Those are things that come largely from fertilizers on fields. But the number one impairment, the number one problem in Iowa water is actually bacteria, which comes primarily from animal feeding operations. And so you might have a lake in the area or a river that is important for recreation that has high levels of bacteria in it, that has had multiple beach closings, things like that. Those are things that would be elevated by local people, or if folks see an opportunity for developing some kind of river recreation or something like that, that might be a priority for them. Communities that have experienced flooding are going to look at that as a really important aspect of planning for them around water. A lot of the practices that will help with reducing nutrients in Iowa's water will also have multiple benefits, and they'll help out with those issues as well. But those need to be part of the conversation from the beginning. The discussion about multiple benefits needs to be part of that discussion. If we just focus on nutrients, we will get some results in those areas as well. But it's important to have that local discussion and local buy-in. The other portion that where the Senate bill was really lacking is in terms of accountability and monitoring and measurement. So the House bill wasn't perfect. It contained some language around monitoring and measurement. But we think any bill really has to have a strong component of measuring the water itself so that you know, okay, is the water getting better over time for the money that we're investing? Setting a baseline and setting some goals so we can look, 10 years in the future and say, is this working? Do we need to make some adjustments going forward? Where are we? Where are we going? If we don't know the goal we're setting or the timeline that we're on, how do we really know if we're making appropriate progress or if we need to change something? So that's another aspect of Senate File 512 that concerns us, that we will be pushing for accountability for those dollars going forward.
Well, in terms of monitoring, I learned earlier that the water quality, the measurements of streams, and that it was citizen science. People could sign up for their kits and go out and monitor the stream near their house. I know that my daughter did that, and I know that Irv Kloss of Ames was doing that, monitoring this Skunk River, I believe. Anyhow, it was he discovered the a break in the sewage pipe in Ames that was dumping raw sewage into our river. And if there hadn't been any monitoring, we wouldn't have discovered that. So what's happened to the water monitoring? Why did they stop the funding for that? And
I think that's a very striking example of how important monitoring is. And monitoring in Iowa is, there are lots of different pieces to it currently. There's about $3 million that goes to the DNR for what we kind of call our ambient water monitoring system, and that's a system that's spread out around the state in different areas, but it certainly doesn't cover every area in the state. And the Citizen Water Monitoring Program, known as IOWater, has been largely discontinued by the DNR due to funding cuts. So, yeah, there's the DNR funding for water monitoring, which is not adequate to cover the state. There's water monitoring going on in some of the watershed projects that are ongoing, but not all of them have that, and it's not required. And so you can be receiving a chunk of state funds to do a watershed project and not be required to have any monitoring for outcomes of that project. And we think that's really not the way to go about making good public policy and good spending of taxpayer dollars. We think that monitoring needs to be in place. So, yeah, you know, the current monitoring system doesn't adequately cover. But even if we were just saying, hey, if you're receiving taxpayer funds in a watershed, you need to be monitoring for outcomes because, you know, we're spending taxpayer money here, that's one thing we think should be achievable.
But you mentioned that the DNR was the entity that was providing money for that. But you also told me yesterday that the DNR budget had been cut from $22 million to $11 million. That's in half. So no wonder they can't monitor. Is there any move to try to restore some of the DNR funding?
Well, you know, yeah, like you said, the DNR general fund budget has been cut in half since 2009. And with the current state budget situation, the Senate came out with a bill last year that would overall cut $52 million more from the current state budget, needing to balance the budget for this year. There is another cut to the DNR included in that of about $123,000. And we are advocating for restoring DNR funds. They have such important work to do. The budget is very tight. But with the current state of state parks, which are severely understaffed at this point, and maintenance of other functions of the DNR, there were serious cuts to the DNR. At the beginning of the summer, they had to eliminate quite a few staff members, including eliminating the Forestry Bureau altogether. And we're cut to the bone with DNR. There's no extra left to cut there. And if we want to have any sort of accountability for the environmental contamination and environmental health in our state, we really need to restore that funding to DNR. There is one thing that's still on the table in terms of the water quality debate is raising the sales tax by a penny, which would fund the Natural Resources and Outdoor Recreation Trust Fund. That is a constitutionally protected fund that was approved by Iowa voters in 2010 with 63% of people voting to approve it. And that would raise funds that would help the DNR, at least with some of the programs around lake restoration, water trails, a variety of things that benefit water quality that would help restore at least some capacity to DNR for taking care of our outdoor recreation resources and improving water quality. So we're really hoping that that is still on the table. The governor and legislators have all said, you know, we're not done with water quality for the year. we hope that that funding is one aspect of it that remains on the table.
So there's a lot to work on. So thank you, Carrie, for being with us today to update us on some of the areas that we need to watch out for. How does somebody get on your mailing list to get your action alerts and so forth?
Sure. So if you go to the Iowa Environmental Council website, which is iaenvironment.org, you'll find a link there to take action, and you can find the sign up for our action alerts. We also have a 2018 legislative page that is linked to off of there as well, that you can go and see the list of bills that we're tracking. There's a link there to help you find your legislator and a link to all the forums that happen every weekend, so you can see if there's an opportunity to go see your legislator in person in your own area on the weekend, which is another great way to have an impact and get in touch with them and make your voice heard.
Thanks, Carrie. I really appreciate your being here with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
In case you just tuned in, this is KHOI Community Radio, and you've heard from Carrie Johansson, Manager of Government Affairs for the Iowa Environmental Council, guiding us through some of the constructive things we could ask the Iowa legislature to do to improve the water quality in Iowa. The rest of the program will be spent making you aware of events coming up in Ames and the surrounding area this week. The first is this afternoon, a colloquium entitled The Farm Bill and Beginning Farmers, How to Create a Sustainable Path for the Next Generation in Agriculture. Please join family farmers, rural residents, and members of the Iowa State University community for a unique discussion about the upcoming Farm Bill debate and how it will impact young and beginning farmers. The 2018 U.S. Farm Bill will be crafted in the next few months. Critical policy debates will shape Iowa's agricultural landscape. National Farmers Union President Roger Johnson will be the featured speaker at a colloquium on the Iowa State University campus today, Wednesday, January 31st, from 3:30 to 5 at Curtis Hall, room 0013. The session will include beginning farmers providing testimony regarding the challenges and opportunities in agriculture. Moving on to the weekend, we have three very diverse events to tell you about. The first is Paxton Williams and the Des Moines Corinthian Baptist Church Praise and Worship Team presenting Meet George Washington Carver to kick off Black History Month. Performances will be on Saturday, February 3rd at 2 and 7:30 p.m. at the Iowa State University Alumni Center, Ryman Ballroom. If you think you know all about Dr. Carver, just hear what Paxton Williams has to say. How did you become interested in George Washington Carver?
Carver has, I would almost say, always been a part of my knowledge base. You know, he's always been a part of my environment. I grew up in the South, a little town called Bay St. Louis, Mississippi, on the Gulf Coast. And Black History Month, we would learn about Carver. We would learn about his work with Peanuts and with Booker T. Washington. And it was only later, when I was looking at colleges, when Iowa State got onto my atmosphere, and that's where I learned about Carver's connection to Iowa State, the state of Iowa. And when I chose to go to Iowa State, I learned more about Carver then. And in fact, when I was recruited to Iowa State, I was a George Washington Carver scholar. And so I learned a bit about Carver then as well. And then I took a seminar taught by the late, great Sandy McNabb. He was in plant pathology and forestry. And he had long admired Carver. And he taught an otter seminar on Carver. And in this seminar, we took a trip down to Diamond, Missouri, to Carver's birthplace, to Carver National Monument. And so I just learned a lot about him there. But it was after the trip to Diamond and after being in Sandy's seminar that I really learned a lot about Carver, and I thought I need to find a way to share some of this research about Carver and some of these great stories that I've learned about him. And Sandy recommended I write a play, And so Jane Cox, the wonderful theater professor on campus, didn't know me, but I happened to see her walking in the union one day, and I stopped her, and I said, you know, I'm Paxton Williams, I'm thinking about writing a play on George Washington Carver, and she said, come and see me. And I did, and she was just very gracious with her ideas, very giving of her time, and she became one of my advisors for my honors project, and she directed the play originally, and we would meet probably 2 to 3 hours an evening for weeks. She was helping me memorize the play. She was helping me work on the script. So though I always knew about Carver, it was my time at Iowa State that really showed me really what made him special, and you know, that really helped show me why I think more people should know his story.
When was it performed?
So I first portrayed Carver April 16th and April 20th of the year 2000. I did it Visha Saturday so my parents could see it. They were in town for Visha. And so I did the two performances, and I thought that would be it. But then some folks from the Alumni Association saw it, and then some other community friends saw it. And so I was asked to do two more performances in 2000. So I did that. Then I left, and I went to Ann Arbor, Michigan, to go to the Gerald Ford School of Public Policy at the University of Michigan. And so I was at Michigan for 2 years, and I portrayed Carver there just as a charity auction kind of offering. And I think I offered dinner with Carver. And in fact, the dean of the Ford School, Becky Blank, who's now, I believe, chancellor at Madison, Wisconsin, I think, she actually purchased it and then just made it available for the whole Ford School. But so I did it then. So I was occasionally getting asked to do it. But then it just kind of started taking off, and I've now portrayed Carver about over 400 times in 24 states and in England. And when I did it in England, I did it for a Rotary District Conference in Bournemouth, England. They had about 900 people there. But I focused on Carver's relationship, or his correspondence with Gandhi, and the folks really were inspired by that. They were also inspired to learn how, in 1916, Carver was named a fellow to the Royal Society for the Encouragement of the Arts, Commerce, and Manufacturers in London, England. And it was almost unheard of for any American, let alone an African-American, to have achieved that honor in 1916. But Carver achieved that honor. They thanked me for sharing that story. And it's interesting because I always get thanked for sharing the story, and I just love sharing the story so much.
The reason that we're talking with you today is because of the performance you're doing as George Washington Carver in conjunction with
the Corinthian Baptist Church praise and worship team. They do a superb job, and they're going to provide, I believe, 4 songs for us, and they're going to do 2 before the Carver portrayal and then 2 afterwards, and it's going to just be a very inspiring, uplifting, educational, entertaining evening.
Is this the first time you've ever performed for the church choir?
It is. So I'm looking forward to it. I'm sure I'm looking forward to it just as much as anybody else might be looking forward to it.
This unforgettable event will be just one day, February 3rd, at the ISU Alumni Center. And that is behind, across the it's on Beach, but the access is really through the parking lot that is the parking lot behind C.Y. Stevens, in case you've never been there before, and the Ryman Ballroom, with performances at 2 p.m. and 7 p.m. Tickets are available at the door. The next event will be up in Webster City at the Webster City Community Theater, opening this Friday, February 2nd, and running 2 weekends. It's the powerful Arthur Miller play, All My Sons, which deals with how war profiteering resulted in personal tragedy during World War II. Although it's about a historic time, the moral issues feel current. I have Abby Serdivant-Sharp here from Webster City, where you're doing the production of All My Sons by Arthur Miller. This is one of Arthur Miller's most powerful plays and a real departure from the mysteries and comedies, musicals, and children's plays that the Webster City Community Theater usually performs.
It is a departure, but we are happy to be tackling it. The story behind it is, it kind of goes back to the man who is now playing in our production the character of Joe Keller, who is the main character. And back almost 50 years ago, when he was in high school, or he was backstage, actually, of a production of All My Sons at his high school, and it really made an impact on him. And so throughout the years, this is a show that he would visit once in a while and think that, you know, gosh, it would be really amazing to stage that, to be in it. You know, it was on his bucket list. And so about 10 years ago when I met him, he kind of made a comment like, hey, you should direct All My Sons. And we kind of thought he was joking because it is such an intense drama and it's a departure for a lot of community theaters. And then about 2 years ago, I found out he was actually quite serious. And so I said, well, gosh, let's make this happen and get it off your bucket list. And so at that point, Webster City started looking into producing All My Sons, and here we are today.
Have you directed other plays for Webster City Community Theater?
I have. This is my fourth show that I have directed, and I have assistant directed on a handful of other shows.
What kind of shows have they been?
I tend to lean more towards dramatic shows as a director. I have done Moonlight and Magnolias, which is it's a comedy, but there's some dramatic moments in there as well. I have done 12 Angry Men. I have done a show called Nevermore, which is a fictitious telling of the last few days of Edgar Allan Poe's life.
Well, those are all pretty serious plays.
I like being in comedies. I like seeing comedies and making audience members laugh, but I also like exploring that other side of human psyche, and this one offered some history as well, and I greatly enjoy history, so it's kind of a meshing together of some areas that I enjoy exploring.
How large is your cast?
There are 10 people in this cast.
Are they all from Webster City?
They are not. We have kind of a fun mix for this show. We have 2 of our 10 that live in Webster City, and the other 8 are from communities outside of Webster City, and in some cases even outside of Hamilton County.
What are some of these? Are they mostly smaller towns?
Mostly smaller towns, but we have Humboldt, Fort Dodge, and then some of the smaller communities like Alden, Blairsburg, Williams, Woolstock, Duncombe is in there as well. Kind of an interesting mix for us.
Did the play attract new talent to your stage?
We did. We were really lucky. We've got 2 brand new folks that have never done a show with us before, and in one case, I don't think she's ever done a show, period. In the instance of the actress playing Anne Deaver, she learned of our auditions, and she is very interested in the 1940s, and that's kind of what drew her to auditioning, and she did a fantastic job.
Is there anything that you'd like to tell our listeners that I haven't asked you?
We would like to let listeners know that this is a departure from our normal comedies, musicals, etc. But we really hope that if they are curious, that they will give us a try and come on out to see the show. We want people who might be considering bringing children to know that we would like them to use discretion when bringing their children. There are some adult themes within this play, and so we want people to know that coming in. And I would also like to definitely give a hats off to our wonderful volunteer crew who came in to build the set and work on sound cues. We have a 1.5-story house now on our stage, and if it were possible to live in it, I would happily move into it and live in it after the show is over. It really is, I think, one of the better sets we've ever had.
It sounds very interesting. What are the dates and times that people can see it?
Our show dates are February 2, 3, 9, 10. And those shows are at 7:30 p.m. And we have matinees on February 4th and 11th, and those are at 2 p.m. And interested persons can buy tickets in a number of fashions here. We've got, they can call our box office at 515-832-4456. They can go online at www.wcctonline.org, or they can stop in at the box office at 1001 Wilson Avenue here in Webster City. And box office hours are Monday through Friday, 5 to 7 p.m., Saturday, 10 a.m. to noon, and 1 hour before each of those show dates that I mentioned.
This is KHOI Community Radio, Story City, Ames, and the surrounding area. I'm your host for today, Susan Franzen, and we've done a couple of previews of shows coming up this weekend, but now this one is very special because we have live guests here with us, and this is... What?
We are so live.
You are so live and
so
lively
live.
And...
Yeah.
Well, anyhow, for our last preview, we have the cast and, I guess, producer or author.
Or producers.
Oh, you're all producers. Okay.
Bohita Man.
Okay. LOL, a show that is produced and directed by Ames resident Clark Ford with a wide variety of comedy.
I'm getting wider.
And lower.
And wilder.
Including political comedy in the style of Saturday Night Live and Laugh-In, among others. Show hosts are KHOI radio stars Tom and Doug, with a cast of 15 zanies from throughout the Ames community. So, welcome, Tom and Doug and Clark.
Thank you. Thank you. By the way, LOL, of course, stands for Laugh Out Loud. And that's our goal. It's just an evening of humor and fun and silliness and belly laughs and everything else that makes things light.
Yes. And it's going to, we ought to tell people where it is, so
yes,
in case they are enthralled and want to hear it.
Well, of course they want to come down to it. So it'll be at the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship of Ames, which is at 1015 Highland Avenue, so right next to campus. And it'll be 7:30 on both Friday and Saturday nights, and it's a benefit for Access, the women's shelter here. And we did this again last year and raised some substantial money for them.
Yes, this is our second annual show, so we're pumped.
Yes, and those who saw it last year, I'm sure won't want to miss it. So,
all new.
All new. But it is just get your tickets at the door, right?
Oh, there's actually no tickets. This is free will donations, and those donations go directly to Access.
Okay. So I can see that Doug is got his fingers on the strings of the guitar.
Oh.
Are you? So I'll turn it
Ouch.
Over to you guys.
Okay.
Well, I guess I'd like to hear from Clark, why? I mean, why do you do this? This is a second, you know, did you not learn your lesson last year?
We had a great time last year. I think the audience had a great time. There was high energy, and it was just fun. And that's why I do it. And that's why I rope you guys into hosting it. You're a huge part of the show, so thank you very much.
Well, there's a lot of talent in this community, too. I mean, that's one of the things that I like about it is you get to see a lot of people showing off a side of their personalities you might not, you know, have known about previously if you just knew them from work or church or something like that.
That's right. We have skits. We have dialogues. We have songs. We have lots of music. But it's all fun. It's all funny stuff. That's the criterion. If it doesn't make you laugh, it doesn't get in the show, hopefully.
So, Tom.
Yes, sir.
You don't even live here. What are you doing out here?
I do live here. I'm here because you made me come out here, and you woke me up today, too.
Well, it's a rare opportunity to see the Tom and Doug Experience live. I mean, it's the Tom and Doug Show is KHOI's first nationally syndicated show that comes out. Do we have a second yet?
Not that I know.
I'll second that.
So we're the first and only show produced at KHOI that's nationally syndicated. And so people assume often that you must live here to do a weekly show. But
I don't really know where I live.
Yeah. Well, you know, you and me both. I mean, we've been traveling around a lot, especially
right.
this past year.
You know, Doug, I heard that you have traveled the Himalayas. I heard that you were going around and you were on a spiritual quest. And did you learn something?
Well, of course. I mean, I think this isn't special to me because I think everyone's on their own spiritual path and searching for answers. I just perhaps took it a little more seriously than most this past year. And,
but I heard that you learned, like, the ultimate truth. I heard that you learned the most important truth that is to be known.
Well, yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Can you tell us? Can you tell us, maybe?
I don't know. I don't know if you're ready for it. You ready for this truth?
All right. Okay. I think I'm ready. Here it is.
I climbed the Himalayas, I searched in every holy town, I went from guru to guru, until I finally found, I found the answers to the questions, I tried so hard and looked for proof. All my searching brought me answers. I was rewarded with the truth.
It was the truth?
The truth.
The truth? What was it?
It was the truth.
Yeah, but what did you learn? What was it?
Yoga hurts and meditation is boring. Yoga hurts. And meditation is boring. Yoga hurts, and meditation is boring. Meditation is boring, and yoga hurts. I read every self-help book. I burned every incense stick and sage. And after 40 years of classes, I've solved the mysteries of the age. I found the answers to the questions that I searched for since my youth. And after buying all that wisdom, I was rewarded with the truth.
The truth?
It was the truth.
The truth, you say?
Yes, it was.
The same truth as I found?
I don't know. I can't remember because I used to play football and I hurt my head a lot when I did.
Yoga hurts and meditation is boring. Yoga hurts. And meditation is boring. Yoga hurts. And meditation is boring. Meditation is boring. And yoga hurts.
It hurts, man. It hurts.
Namaste, losers.
All right, I'm laughing. That was good. Thank you.
Well, we don't usually have such a spiritual aspect to our local talk program. Maybe you should start telling us about some of the other zanies that are going to be LOL.
Well, we have a wide variety of things. Of course, we have Tom and Doug. They are our hosts, kind of like you know, Rowan and Martin, or the Smothers Brothers, in that kind of vein. But we have a lot of skits, kind of in the vein of Saturday Night Live, and we have songs, a wide variety of songs. Some of them fast. About half are original, like The Truth, if that's the truth about The Truth.
It is the truth about The
Truth. Okay. And others, of course, would be more well-known to the audience.
Oh, you're not going to tell any names. I remember that I don't know who Kay Burger was on with when she was the old lady on the park bench.
She will be there again with that's right,
with Skip,
with Skip Walter, and they're so they do that laugh-in kind of thing with the old lady and the old man and the park bench. Very, very
funny.
But
they're not acting when they do that, right?
Well, they're just very talented.
Yeah. Well, some of us don't have to put on a lot of makeup to be the old lady and the old man.
This year we have some classic Monty Python and the Holy Grail skits. So that will be very fun. We have the blues. We have a couple of skits or scenes, actually, from one of my musicals, 1961, the musical. And Doug gets to play an Elvis-like character and sing.
Mercy. I'll have another plate of Twinkies with some gravy on it.
That's not in the dialogue.
No, I'm hungry.
I didn't write that.
He didn't have breakfast yet.
Yeah, and you might mention your previous plays, the decades plays.
Oh, yes. Over the years, I've written 6 full-length amateur musicals set in different decades. So we will see a couple of pieces, one from a musical set in 1972, and that will be The Housewives Blues, sung by Doris Nash. And we'll have a blues guitar and a piano accompanying there. And then a couple of songs from 1961, the musical, including a song that has a title of Why Can't a Man Be More Like a Woman?
One of those gender fluid songs.
Well, say, it looks like if we start right away, we have time for another song from you. Can you...
Yes.
I heard the rumor that you had another one
we
ready
have
to go.
We more than one song. It's true.
Oh, no.
What have you started?
We'll run out of time in about 7 minutes.
Well. We think that there should be more love in the world. Don't you think there should be more love in the world?
Well, especially after all that painful and boring yoga and meditation.
Yeah, and we're just sort of at a little bit of a loss, because we find that when you bring love to the world, you have to bring it one-to-one. Like, I have to bring it to this person, to that person. All these people, you have to bring the love one-to-one.
It's exhausting.
And humans really should develop an easier way to get love to, like, the masses really quickly, because we've done that, you know, for other things. So we're thinking...
Yeah, we're good at mass-producing some things.
Yeah, and getting the love to the people en masse, you know. So we've decided that what we really need is a bump stock for love.
So for people who don't know what a bump stock is.
Yes, a bump stock is the little, it's like a way to press a trigger on a gun over and over and over again really quickly. So it turns
your gun into a machine gun.
Oh, so you had the machine gun of love?
Yeah,
kind of, yes. So that's what we need to get love to the people.
Love needs a way to get even. Love needs a day of revenge. Love needs a way to embrace your world in a way that you can't defend.
Love will deliver a message. Love's got nothing to fear. And we need a way to get love to reach the people so that love can make it perfectly clear.
We need a bump stock of love. A bump stock of love. Raining down like a storm from up above. We need a bump stock of love. Love never
never take my lunch money. Love will never block out the sun. Love will never hurt us. Love will not disappoint if love's a good guy with a gun. And love doesn't make transactions. And love doesn't need to exchange. And love can fill your heart with joy and hope, even when you think you're out of range. We need a bump stock of love. A bump stock of love. Raining down like a storm from up above. We need a bump stock of love. We need a bump.
Oh yeah, it's that part.
Always charismatic. Fully automatic. Love won't need permission. Infinite ammunition. We need a bump stock of love. A bump stock of love. Raining down like a storm from up above. We need a bump stock of love.
Everybody!
A bump stock of love.
Yes!
A bump stock of love. Raining down like a storm from up above. We need a bump stock of love.
Oh, isn't that sweet? Yes.
Yeah. You know, we have sophisticated humor like this.
Yeah, we're sophisticated.
Yes, that was. And very silly humor. And all kinds of humor. So, you know,
even
whatever
funny
you
humor.
Oh my goodness! And there will be a wee bit of political humor. I mean, it's been a year that the script sort of writes itself in that regard.
Really?
Yes. Yes.
I've seen that. Can you get where like, the pencil will actually come up onto the paper?
Something like that. Yeah. That's right.
Well,
that's
Tom
right.
has a theory about humor.
Yes. And my theory about humor is that humor is a truth that has been unvoiced. So when it's a truth that we already know, but when you speak it, it somehow is funny. that's my theory.
Well, like yoga hurts and meditation is boring.
Yeah, because we all knew that. It was funny because we all
knew that.
We're
not supposed to say it, though, right?
But,
no.
Yeah, once he said it, yeah.
I was just a little bit shocked. Especially coming from somebody whose other show, besides Tom and Doug, is
Zen Monk and a Professor walk into a bar. So.
Oh, that's funny.
And I lead meditation classes. Yeah, and so I know what I'm talking about. Meditation is really freaking boring. And my wife is a yoga instructor.
Oh, can I come to your class?
Yeah. Well, because, you know, I'll tell you the truth about it. That's what makes it work, actually.
That's why
that is the magic ingredient in
Yeah, that's
in
why
meditation.
You want to do it. Right.
Well, and of course, then you don't have to be worried about being politically correct if you're already, you know, a practitioner.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, you can worry about it. I mean, worrying is my thing. That's what I do.
So you don't meditate. You just worry?
Yeah, I just worry. That's my – I handle that
don't
part of the business.
Don't sell yourself short. You also do a lot of guilt.
Oh, I do guilt, too. Yeah, guilt. I do that part of the business, too. Yeah.
he's got it all.
Yeah, right.
Well, there's always a lot of humor in that.
So, yeah, in a year that – you know, no matter where you are on the political spectrum, it's been stressful. I think it's important to get together as a community and be able to voice some of those truths that this is stressful for people.
Mm-hmm.
And that, you know, there's always humor in it too. And if you can see that, it just helps to lighten the whole thing.
Well, I have a question about humor bringing people together because you know, the humor that I have seen probably depends on where my TV dial is set.
Sure.
But it's hard for me to imagine that people who have opposite political views could really enjoy the humor that's on Saturday Night Live, for example, or Stephen Colbert. So are you reaching across the great divide?
Clark's wearing his Make America
Great
hat.
Yeah, therefore he is the divide.
Oh, that's right. You have that's a red Make America Great Again hat on.
Yes, I do. Well, it's part of one of my many costumes.
I see.
For the show. But yeah, I would say that probably not a lot of care has been taken to include the entire political spectrum of.
Which is just truth here. That's right.
Yeah, but also if you people like to claim that the media are biased in one way or the other. They are. They're almost always biased for whoever's in power, because that's the agenda setting value of the presidency, is that you actually get more airtime than anyone else. And so in a sense, we've just let the agenda be set by
that it's okay then to make maybe more fun of those in power?
I think they're the ones who need it most. Right?
Well, that makes sense.
I think that's probably, if you go back historically, that's always where the humor has been, against the powerful.
Whoever's in power, yeah, it deserves to be laughed at. And so we're just doing our civic duty.
Okay.
Well, to follow up, though, on a point that Doug made, I think this has not been the happiest year for everybody. So I feel that humor can be healing, and I'm hoping that that is accomplished. It won't be for the entire political spectrum, but for those who may have felt the most oppressed during especially this last year, then this is a chance to laugh and be in community and heal.
And certainly for all the fans of Tom and Doug.
Oh, yes.
Not those people.
Both of them.
Both of them.
Okay.
Yeah, you know who you are.
You have been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I've been your host for today, Susan Franzen. Thank you for listening. Other voices you heard were Carrie Johansson, Paxton Williams, Amy Sturdivant-Sharp, Clark Ford, Doug Gentile, and Tom Florek. Local Talk airs at 7 a.m., noon, and 7 p.m. here on KHOI at 89.1 FM. Remember that you can also hear it online at khoifm.org and find links to the guests and information you heard during the program. KHOI is streaming live online at khoifm.org. Today's show was engineered by Jackie Norman. Our theme song, as always, is Backtrackin' by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Other music you heard was live by Tom and Doug singing their original songs, and you can hear more of those on Friday and Saturday. Local Talk is a radio production workshop as well as a show. So if you would like to try your hand at reporting, we'll train you. Come and join the Local Talk team. Let us know what you think. You can call us at 515-292-2878. Email us at khoiradio@gmail.com or go to the contact page of our website, khoifm.org. Remember, you, the listener, are what makes KHOI meaningful and possible.
Tom, I just remembered. I, the listener, am what makes KHO Radio possible.
Wow.
Thank you for listening, and see you again on the radio.
Support for KHOI comes from Stevens Auditorium, presenting the Estonian National Symphony Orchestra on Thursday, February 1st at 7:30 p.m. Tickets and more information can be found at center.iastate.edu.